Back now with Day to Day, and good news, our humorist Brian Unger is back too. Here's today's Unger Report.
I think we're sending the wrong signals to the oil companies, to the CEOs, the sheikhs, the politicians, well, to the evil despotic overlords of our world's oil supply. Our feedback is flawed. Put yourself in their shoes, or sandals, or their bejeweled footwear. How upset do we really appear to, say, the Saudis, when we're willing to sleep without shelter, outside, on a cold, urine-soaked New York City sidewalk for 8 days, waiting to buy a cell phone?
We are working on a project to set a new Guinness Book of World Records for the longest time waiting in line to buy something.
This is not a good project for young people. The Peace Corps, Meals on Wheels, these are projects. Buying something, I don't recall JFK writing about that in Profiles in Courage. Oh yes, we are mad. Apple earned about $330 million during the first weekend of iPhone 3G sales, according to Fortune. What does this mean? It means we're so angry about gas prices and the economy, we're determined to email someone about it. Twice as fast with awesome applications. Now I can play Super Monkey Ball while I sit in traffic. That's where we're really thumbing our noses at those oil speculators and cartels. We're taking to the streets in millions of cars, in the same choking, unabated morass of traffic to tell OPEC, we're not going to tolerate these high gas prices anymore. In fact, if I ever get to where I'm going, I'm going to call someone to complain about it from my iPhone. But to send a clear signal to the leadership of this country, well, just pretend for a moment we have leaders who stand up to the corporate interests who profit from the high price of gas. We all went to see Batman. Here's a guy in line this weekend.
Batman shows us that if we push the human mind to its maximum, we can achieve something like that.
If we put our minds to it, we'll all be flying like bats. Achieving energy independence, I don't know, that's pure fantasy to me. We did achieve something historic. A record box office weekend, over $155 million. We deserve to imagine ourselves as bats. We deserve the best cell phones, too. But somewhere, I hear a Saudi prince laughing as he slaps an oil executive on the back as a politician carries their water. And I wonder, who's the real joker? And that is today's Unger Report. I'm Brian Unger.
And remember, you can take your Unger with you. Humor from the Unger Report is available as an NPR podcast. Find out more at npr.org.
Struggling banks, slumping house values, surging gas prices. Those are the hot economic topics these days. But there's another big problem, health care, and how to pay for it. One in four people say they're having trouble paying health care bills. That's according to a new NPR poll done in Florida and Ohio with the Kaiser Family Foundation and the Harvard School of Public Health. NPR's Joseph Shapiro has this report.
When Jamie Drzewicki was diagnosed with breast cancer, that was a shock, of course. But she had health insurance, so she figured her medical costs were covered. She had her surgery last year.
And then the envelope started coming. $12,000 was one bill, $40,000 was another bill, $2,000 was another bill.
Today, she owes over $62,000.
Well, I don't know everything. I just know, you know, that I had insurance, and it's just not good enough. It wasn't enough.
It turned out that although she had health insurance through her job, there was a limit. Her insurance would pay up to $100,000 a year. Everything over that got billed to her. Drzewicki says before she got cancer, $100,000 seemed like a lot of coverage.
Not being greatly educated, it sounded like a lot of money to me for someone who just needed a mammogram every year and a pap smear and nothing else. I was a healthy person.
Drzewicki has spiked hair. She's in tight jeans and a T-shirt. She's 58, but looks years younger. She tells her story from the small recording studio in the pink house where she lives with her husband north of Miami. They're both musicians. They perform in clubs and on cruise ships. She's also got a day job, one with insurance. She's the activities director at a nursing home. She recently switched jobs because after her cancer, her boss gave her a hard time about missing work. Now she works at another nursing home. She gets paid less, and because it's much farther away, she spends a lot more on gas.
I am living paycheck to paycheck, and I am making the decision between food and my cancer medication, and I had to buy food on my Target card because I knew I could pay it off. And my husband killed me because he said, do you know the percentage on that? I said, honey, I'll pay it off with my next paycheck. I'll never do that again.
Drzewicki is far from alone. In polling by NPR, Kaiser, and Harvard, 28% of people in Florida say they're having trouble paying their medical bills. They're not the uninsured people you might think.
There are people with health insurance, but it's not covering the copays, the deductibles, some of the drug costs, the dental care that may be needed, the home services. It's not deep enough to protect people.
That's Robert Blendon, who runs polling programs for the Harvard School of Public Health. He says one of the biggest surprises from the poll is that 1 in 5 people in Florida and 1 in 4 in Ohio say they've got collection agencies chasing them. The number one reason is unpaid medical bills.
And so the idea that middle-income people will be pursued by collection agencies for many people is not something they ever would have thought happened to them.
People like Jamie Drzewicki.
So they call my house 2-3 times a night. And the last collection agency guy said, well, you know, we're going to have to send it to the lawyers now.
One part of the hospital is helping her apply for charity care, but so far she hasn't been eligible. Another office in the same hospital called in the collection agency.
And the harassment has been part of my stress while I'm trying to recover. No joke.
She's got new insurance from her new job. There's one more surgery ahead in August for breast reconstruction. But she's pushed it back a few days because she's got a gig in a 2,000-seat theater in a Florida retirement community.
Yeah, I'm going to be at Winmore Village.
It's her first performance since the cancer.
But my stage name is Jamie Danger, Joe, so keep that in mind. The Jamie Danger Show at Winmore Village. She's back again.
And what she loves most in the world is to sing.
What can I sing? I sing, what a day this has been. What a rare mood I'm in. Why, it's almost like being in love.
Joseph Shapiro, NPR News.
All the music of life seems to be like a bell that is ringing for me.
The full results of our poll and how residents of Florida and Ohio are feeling the economic pinch are at NPR.org.
I was falling, I would swear I was falling. It's almost like being in love. When we walked up the bridge,
not a word did we say.
Just ahead, facing fear on the battlefield, in fiction, and in the shower. It's NPR News.
From NPR News, it's Day to Day. Last weekend was a big one at the movies, the biggest ever, in fact, topping $250 million. And that's thanks in large part to the latest Batman movie, The Dark Knight. Until now, last year's Spider-Man 3 held the record for the biggest opening numbers. Joining us now is Marketplace's John Dimsdale. John, the film industry's been in a bit of a slump, so how good is this news?
Well, you're right. Overall, this year, theater attendance is off about 4%. And that's due in part to changes in the way that films are distributed. More and more people are getting their movie fix on their computers or their cell phones. Or they have these great entertainment systems at home and they just wait for the DVD. But this weekend's record box office shows that summer is still a great time to issue a blockbuster. People are on vacation, kids are out of school, you can get families into the theaters all during the week. And Amir Malan, an entertainment industry analyst with Qualia Capital, says this is all good for Hollywood because the audience probably saw 3 or 4 previews for upcoming films, and it reminded people what they like about going to the movies.
I went to see the film this weekend, and there was a lot of applause at the end. So it kind of validates the theatrical experience, and that's always good for the business. Especially coming now, it's evidence that the theatrical experience and the film business in general is really recession-proof.
John, I have not seen this movie yet, so don't give anything away. But can you tell me how exactly this Batman movie pulled off this record-breaking draw?
Well, of course, Batman is a hugely popular franchise to begin with, and the film did get very good advance reviews. It was shown in 4,000 movie theaters over the weekend. There's an IMAX draw. It was shown on these huge screens at almost 100 IMAX theaters. And then there was the curiosity about Heath Ledger's performance. He died 6 months ago after finishing his role as the Joker in the movie, and Amir Mallin thinks Ledger was a very big draw.
I'm an Academy voter, and I would be very, very surprised if he didn't get a posthumous nomination. And relative to the other performances that we'll probably see through the end of the year, wouldn't be surprising if he wins a Best Supporting Actor nomination as well.
Dark Knight was a Warner Brothers film, so what does all of this mean for the studio that produced it?
Well, Warner had been, they had a great spring with Sex and the City, but its summer movies, Speed Racer and Get Smart, have only been modest successes. So this weekend should pull Warner out of a summertime slump. You could say The Dark Knight has become a white knight for Warner. And by the way, Warner's looking forward to another big blockbuster this fall. Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince is due out in November.
That I will be seeing opening weekend. Thank you so much, John. That's John Dimsdale of Public Radio's daily business show, Marketplace.
The Library of Congress chose a new poet laureate this past week. Her name? Kay Ryan. And if she were sitting in this chair right now, she'd do the whole hour in like a minute. That's how compact her poems are, how full her language is. Kay Ryan, are you ready for the job?
Yep.
And what is the job?
Well, I thought I should give you a really short answer after that intro.
That's good.
The job is deliciously general and unspecific in its nature. There are very few official duties. I have an office. I think it has pencil sharpener. Hope so. In the Library of Congress. I can make projects to improve American life and the relationship between poetry and America if I want, but I don't have to.
One of my favorites of your poems is called Home to Roost. Would you read it?
I would be glad to. Shall I tell you a little bit about that poem?
Sure.
First of all, it comes from the thing we say to other people when they've done a lot of stupid things and now they're getting their comeuppance. We say, well, your chickens are coming home to roost. And I have no doubt that when I wrote this, I was chastening myself and I was telling myself this. But unfortunately, this poem was sitting on the desk of an editor in New York at the time of 9/11. And it suddenly took on this terrible added significance. And I had to withdraw it because it seemed cruelly appropriate. I'll read it to you. The chickens are circling and blotting out the day. The sun is bright, but the chickens are in the way. Yes, the sky is dark with chickens, dense with them. They turn and then they turn again. These are the chickens you let loose, one at a time, and small, various breeds. Now they have come home to roost, all the same kind, at the same speed. Now, right after 9/11, that sounded, you know, the blue sky in here, the clear sky, sounded just like the beauty of that day. Mm-hmm. And those chickens sounded much too much like airplanes.
You said your poems are almost an empty suitcase.
Well, I've always been extremely enamored of cartoons and cartooning, in which you have essentially just the outline. And I think if you leave something empty but charged in some way, not overly elaborated, you can have a surprising number of things come out of people when they read it. That's what I'm hoping, anyhow. Hmm. And, I mean, the truth is, it just is my constitution to do things that way.
To keep things sparse but powerful?
Really simple. Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully. I mean, that would be the ideal.
But you teach remedial English at a college in Northern California, so
why do you say but?
Well, it just seems like a poet of your stature teaching remedial English.
Well, I think it's distinguished work. I've always taught part-time to a great extent so that I could have most of my life for wool gathering. You have to do about 100 pounds of wool gathering for an ounce of really good language. Mm-hmm. So it's very inefficient, and it takes an awful lot of time. But to get back to teaching remedial English, I like the relationship with students. They know what they want, and they're there to get it, as opposed to many other teaching situations.
Would you read one more poem? It's another favorite of mine called Patience.
Sure. Patience. Patience is wider than one once envisioned, with ribbons of rivers and distant ranges, and tasks undertaken and finished with modest relish by natives in their native dress. Who would have guessed it possible that waiting is sustainable, a place with its own harvests, or that in time's fullness, the diamonds of patience couldn't be distinguished from the genuine in brilliance or hardness?
Kay Ryan will become the nation's new poet laureate in October. Thank you very much for reading for us.
My pleasure.
Starting this week, more than 1 million low-wage workers get a pay raise. The federal government's minimum wage is set to jump 70 cents to $6.55 per hour. NPR's Scott Horsley reports.
This is the second of three annual increases in the minimum wage that were ordered by Congress last year, after a decade with no increase. Ross Eisenbray of the Economic Policy Institute says even with the latest boost this week, minimum wage workers won't make up the ground they've lost to inflation.
The minimum wage has been losing its value pretty steadily. You know, it's been falling, then it bumps up a little, falls, bumps up a little, but has a long way to go to catch up to where it was all throughout the 60s and 70s.
In fact, nearly half the states already require a higher minimum wage than the federal government does. But the federal minimum still governs pay for many workers, especially in low-wage industries like restaurants and hotels. Eisenbray says when the federal minimum jumps to $7.25 an hour next year, some 12 million workers will be affected.
6.5 million, I think, will get a direct bump, and then people who are just above 7.25, because their managers and bosses will want to keep some distance between them and entry-level workers, will give them a raise too. It's still a very real thing for millions of people.
Raising the minimum is still controversial, since opponents argue it forces employers to cut staffing. 10 states have taken steps to index their minimum, so wages rise automatically with inflation. Scott Horsley, NPR News.